This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Ben Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
Don Brow of Jazz Scene magazine describes Melbourne's Rory Clark as a new young pianist of enviable talent. Rory is a pianist, composer, arranger, and is about to launch his second album called Rory Remembers. Tonight, it's my pleasure to welcome to the Bent Notes studio at Joy 94.9, Rory Clark.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Rory. Thank you for coming in on such a cold night.
That's my real pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
A new young pianist of enviable talent. That's very high praise. I'm assuming it does reflect the work that you've put into becoming a musician.
Well, thank you. Yes, it is a very high praise, and I'm very honoured to get those kind of accolades. Yeah, I guess I've worked very hard at it. I started at about age 11, and I haven't stopped sort of practising and learning all the way. It's a continual journey.
Starting at the age of 11, what prompted you to actually think to yourself, I can play an instrument, or I want to play an instrument?
Well, my father, Roger Clark, is an alto saxophone player, so I grew up just hearing sort of jazz on radio and hearing some of his jam sessions. I think he dragged me along to a few things when I was just knee-high to a grasshopper. And
you had no choice.
Yeah, and that sort of sound got in my head, and I, you know, experimented with pop music when I was younger. But I guess when I was about 11, I just picked up one of those musical Christmas cards. I started trying to transcribe it on the piano, and my dad's like, oh, you're good at that. You should learn to play jazz piano. And I sort of started taking lessons. I guess I fell in love with it quite quickly. It was something I took to quite naturally, so...
Is the rest of the family musical as well?
I've got three sisters, and two of the three play music. So, my mother used to play classical piano before she had four kids. That slowed her down a bit. Yeah, we're all pretty musical, so, yeah, it's good.
Certainly good when you've got music in the family. It's very encouraging to people, I think.
It is. It is indeed.
And do you remember what that tune was that you had to transcribe?
I cannot remember. It was one of those Christmas carols, probably Jingle Bells or something like that. But anyway.
And you sat down there with the card and just one finger on the keys.
Yeah, pretty much.
And worked it out.
I don't think I even knew what note was what on the piano. I'm pretty sure that was the case. I just picked it out by ear.
You just worked out, though, that you hit them and they make a noise.
Yeah.
So is that your earliest memory of music, when you sat down at the piano and picked out the Christmas carol? Or do you have memories of anything particular that sticks in your mind from earlier on, other than just the fact that you were surrounded by music?
I did try violin, and of course my dad bought me an alto sax, and I did play on Young Talentine when I was 3 years old.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, back in the day, but I didn't like the sort of vibrating reed in my mouth. It was all tickly, and it just wasn't really kind of natural for me. And I guess when I sat down at the piano, it did feel natural, so I guess that's what I gravitated towards.
So the violin and the alto sax just didn't make it?
Yeah. I guess the jazz piano thing was somewhere hidden, and it just came out when I started playing piano. I was like, yep, this is a good fit. This is me.
What else have you learned other than violin and alto sax?
I did actually experiment with playing drums at school.
Doesn't everyone go to drums?
Yeah, probably. It was one of those things. I guess the syncopation was a good thing because, you know, fundamentally a piano is a percussion instrument, so it is good to sort of study sort of the rhythm and stuff, because a lot of it is, you know, fundamental to the piano.
Did you give the drums away or decide that it wasn't what you wanted?
I just sort of gave it away. I phased it out because I figured it's better to be better at one thing than sort of a jack of all trades, and, you know, there's so many competing things on your... demands on your time and things like that. So I just thought, you know, let's just focus on the piano. It's my first love, and yeah.
I suppose there was probably never any doubt that it was going to be jazz.
No, pretty much in my blood. Very fortunate when I was 13 to meet Gil Askey. He was a legend of Motown, and some of his most notable things was he worked throughout Motown with the Jackson 5, Stevie Wonder, Diana Ross, and in 1972 they did a motion picture with Diana Ross called Lady Sings the Blues. It was a tribute to Billie Holiday. And in 1973, Gil Askey actually got an Academy Award nomination for that because the music was fantastic. And it was only later on, when I was maybe 17 or 18, I sort of watched the film and the band, and there's back sort of showing him rehearsing the band, and there was guys like Oliver Nelson, Benny Golson, Harry Sweets Edison, Ernie Watts, who were like absolute jazz royalty, past and present, and I was just like absolutely in awe. Oh my God, this guy is the real deal. I am so fortunate to have met this guy. Like, he's just no one better, really, you know. It's just, it says it all.
An amazing experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
I reckon we're going to have a listen to a track. Now, we did have a listen to Goodbye Gil. We'll have a chat about that shortly. But how about we have a listen to another track? Any preference from the album?
Well, you mentioned earlier it's the guitarist Doug DeVries' birthday, so he's one of the featured artists on this album. I absolutely love his playing. He, like you said, he's one of the best kind of players of that genre in the world today. He's just phenomenal. So let's listen to Fascination.
Fascination from Rory Clark and his band.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
My special guest tonight on Bent Notes is Melbourne's pianist Rory Clark. He's about to release his brand new album called Rory Remembers, and it's got a beautiful image on the front. Plain and simple, but it's a beautiful image of a grand, I reckon it might be a baby grand piano.
It was actually drawn by my girlfriend Jacinta Bridges.
Oh, yeah, fantastic job, she's Jacinta.
Yeah, she studied at the VCA. She's actually gone to visual merchandising, works at the zoo now. She's just an incredible drawer, and I just sort of had this concept in my mind, and she drew something. I was like, that is beautiful. Like, that's going on the album cover for sure.
Oh, I'm glad you chose it because it really does look good. And then inside there's a what looks like a partial piano in what obviously has been a watercolour.
That's right, yeah. So she did a couple of different concepts of the cover, and they both made the cut. I couldn't choose, so I guess the hand-drawn sketch in pen was on the front, and the watercolour ended up as a sort of backing tray sort of thing behind the CD. So, yeah.
Nice way to do it. We've had a listen to a couple of tracks there. We had Goodbye Gil earlier in the evening on Bent Notes, and then we had a listen to Fascination with Doug DeVries. Now, on Goodbye Gil, you get partway through, and all of a sudden someone starts talking.
Yeah, that's actually Gil himself. I was very fortunate to work with him a lot in probably the last 5 years of his life. In fact, we did every Friday once a month at Dizzy's Jazz Club in Richmond, where I'm launching the record. And he taught us so much about music, not just how to play it and the sort of stuff, like the idioms of jazz throughout history, 20th century, but he also just taught us just to be a great entertainer. He used to regale people with these fantastic stories. And, you know, as he got older and older, I just thought, wow, I'm so lucky. I just had this brainwave one night. I just picked up my phone and he was sort of doing his 20-minute sermon on his life and talking about Harry Sweets Edison or someone like that, or Harry James. And I just recorded on my phone and I thought, this is gold. And not long after he passed away, I was devastated. I wrote a tune, Goodbye Gil, and I just had this brainwave. I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to put his voice over the tracks? So I wrote this outro sort of thing in a Latin style and used one of his old students, Eric Budd, on the album, which was beautiful tribute too, and he did a fantastic job, might I add. And I sort of added in his voice afterwards, and it just fitted perfectly. I thought, wow, the planets really have aligned, you know, that it's meant to be. So I hope he's smiling from the other side when he hears it.
I think he will be. It was a track that just felt so good, and then you hear the voice, and you think, yeah, that's got to be Gil. And then he rambles on about bits and pieces, and the music comes over the top. You've done a beautiful job of mixing that, Rory.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely superb. Yeah. The album itself is your second album. You had an album a couple of years ago now called New Beginnings. What forces you to think, I want to put an album out?
Well, I guess I've been composing for a long time, and composition for me is one of those things that I don't like to force. It just, you know, I have years where I'll do a whole lot of music and it all just come pouring out, and other times not much comes out for a little while, or you might write a riff or an A section of a tune and 6 months or a year later the bridge comes to you and that sort of thing. But I let it happen organically. But I guess around when I did New Beginnings, I'd probably written about 8 or 9 tunes and thought, yeah, it's about time I did a proper album. And I went to the ABC and used terrific producers there, Chris Corr, who's a legend. He's worked with all these fantastic musicians, jazz, opera, classical. He knows his stuff, and he's a musician himself, so he's got the best of both worlds. And I used him again on Rory Remembers. He lives down in Currumburra. I bring him down because, you know, I know I'm in excellent hands with, and he's fantastic to work with, both very encouraging, but he's just got ears like an elephant. He understands, you know, the whole process through and through. So
it must be very satisfying as a musician to walk in the studio and have all the technical people understand exactly what you're going through.
Absolutely, absolutely. It sure helps. It really does. Because, you know, recording, I must say, is quite a stressful process. It's a bit like being on the podium talking to 10,000 people. But, you know, every little note you put down, you know, is on the record. So it is kind of getting into that right mindset where, you know, the way I've recorded both albums, it's pretty much a live take. We just do maybe two or three sort of takes and we just take the best one. There's no overdubbing, and it's the old school kind of sound of like kind of blue 60s sort of with Miles Davis. So we like that live sound, warts and all, but it's got that real energy. It's not overdubbed or synthesized.
I think it's something that I've heard quite often now in speaking to musos on Bent Notes. The live recording gives such a nice sound. Rob Burke was here a little while ago and he was talking about his new album, The Power of One, again using this live sense rather than overdubbing things and putting them all in place and having something that might be perfect electronically but doesn't have the reality of real musos playing.
That's it. You know, there's little things, you know, your own worst critic, and you listen to stuff, oh, I could have done that a little bit better or whatever, but you think, well, you know, no one else is going to know, particularly when it's a original composition, and you just got to go with it, because, you know, you lose so much if you overdub. And, you know, some of these guys spend, you know, hours, I'm sorry, months and months just to do one track, and, you know, it's quite refreshing just to do the opposite. Go, you know what, 2 days, that's it. We'll get it down, warts and all, and, you know.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
My guest tonight on Bent Notes is Rory Clark, who has just releasing his brand new album called Rory Remembers. We're going to have a listen to another track from this album. Solo Voyager sounds like an interesting name. What's it about?
It's actually, I think it was one of the very first tunes I wrote back in about 1998. And it was just, when I was saying before, you know, how I write something and it sort of comes to me later on. Well, I wrote this kind of groove-based A section. It was more of a funk rock thing, and I grew up in the jazz idiom, so it was a bit different. But I really liked that sound, but it was probably 6 months later, I was listening to some McCoy Tyner sort of stuff and something just clicked. I sort of wrote this bebop kind of bridge. It swings and then it transfers between the two sounds. So anyway, I decided to lay it down on this album.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
My special guest tonight, Rory Clark. Do you enjoy playing your own compositions or covers more?
I've got to say, I do like playing my originals. It's a way to get your own voice out there, and I've written so many different genres. I can explore different elements of my playing. It's good fun. If I am covering other things, I do enjoy playing covers, but one of the key things that Gil Askey, the trumpeter who the album's made for, he sort of taught me, when you play a tune, you've got to make it your own. So I guess I put a lot of my compositional skills, even if I am playing a cover, I like to sort of come up with an original kind of feel or a new intro or a different kind of harmony and bring it to life that way. So put your own sort of signature on it.
You're aiming in your performance to be you, not to copy anyone else, just to be you and bring something new to those performances.
Absolutely. I was been to New York twice. And I was fortunate when I went there in 2004, I actually went to a masterclass at Blue Note with the legendary pianist McCoy Tyner.
Oh, wow.
And I saw him a couple of years ago, and he's still playing great, but he's getting on a bit. But back then he was very much at his prime and he was just phenomenal. But that was one of the key things he taught me. You know, people were asking, you know, how do you do this? How do you do that? And he's like, you've really got to just develop your own sound. And I guess that's what he's remembered for, because he didn't sound like anyone else. He, you know, pioneered this quartal sort of piano voicing sound that's sort of become idiosyncratic of his own sort of style and been imitated by many people. So I guess he's done something right.
I think so. Now, who's out in Australia for the International Jazz Festival? Was it last year or year before?
I think it was the year before. I saw him at the Melbourne Town Hall with Jose James, the vocalist, and it was a fantastic concert, needless to say. So,
yes.
Yeah.
When you're performing, let's say you're performing with an audience, what are you aiming for with the audience? Are you looking for spontaneity or energy? Are you thinking about the harmonic structure and the melody? Or is there something else that you're looking for in that live performance?
Fundamentally, when I'm performing, I'm looking to connect with the audience. One thing I can't stand seeing is when people do sort of self-indulgent kind of music. And so when I write music and when I perform especially, I want to connect with the audience. And there was another thing I learned from Gil. You know, he never had a sort of set list to run off. He'd read the crowd and he'd go, all right, it's time for a blues. They're ready for Kansas City Shuffle, you know, you just launch into it and you just, the way you go. And I think that's a special skill you get as a performer, to be able to read the crowd. And you bounce off them and, you know, they bounce off you. And it's a two-way thing. It's, you know, music's a language and it's all about communicating with the audience.
Whether it be a small club concert,
that's right,
or a huge festival appearance,
yeah,
the same philosophy applies.
That's right. Obviously, with the huge festival thing, you can't bounce off them as much, so it's more about having that set list and you try and preempt what they're going to enjoy and you present a suite of music. But in the small club atmosphere, it's very much that one-to-one or that smaller group thing where you're really bouncing off the crowd. They're right there and part of the performance.
Where do you work out your off-centre music, as in if you want to do something a bit different that's not actually necessarily connecting directly with the audience, but you want to put it another way, show off, what do you do? When do you do that?
Well, I guess it's probably more about communicating with your fellow instrumentalists. So, you know, you're reading them, and often as a piano player, I get huge joy, you know, like I was doing a gig the other day and I'm working with Brian Abrahams, who's the drummer on my album, and Paige Smith, who's a fantastic bass player from San Francisco. And, you know, Paige is laying down this great walking bass line. He's laying down the harmony. And then, you know, Brian's just firing off all these rhythms left, right and centre. And I'm just bouncing along. I'm getting harmony from one. And I'm literally like a painter with, like, you know, colour coming from one. And, you know, he's the brushes. And I'm here I am with the canvas at the piano and just, like, you know, putting down all this music. And it's just so fantastic. It's just, it's hard to describe it to a non-musician, but I have to say it's just a real joy. It's a language and it's an energy and it's just so much fun and enjoyability in playing music.
But what a lovely analogy to painting.
Yeah.
To putting down the various layers and mixing them up to get the final result.
Yeah.
It's the musical Mona Lisa.
That's right. It's good fun.
Recording or live performance, what appeals the most to you? What do you enjoy the most?
I guess a live performance thing, because you've got the crowd there and I get so much energy from a crowd. You know, we've all had those things. You know, there's an old joke, you know, what's the difference between a jazz musician and a rock musician? A rock musician plays 3 chords to 1,000 people and a jazz musician plays 1,000 chords to 3 people. And we've all had those club gigs where, you know, there's hardly any audience. It's very demoralising. It's hard to sort of fire off a really good performance, try as you might, and we've all been there. But, you know, it certainly helps to have a full crowd and you get that energy and spontaneity and you people tapping their foot or they get up and yelling out or dancing and stuff. And I enjoy that, you know, it's really good fun.
It's that interaction that feeds and encourages the creativity.
Yeah.
Small groups or big bands?
I guess the small groups are more my preference because there is more space to be yourself and be heard, whereas the big band, I play in the Dizzy's Big Band every Wednesday, and it's a fantastic discipline to be able to read and listen, and I do love it. It's a very powerful sound, but you're playing orchestrated parts, so it's very much sort of set, and there's a few spots for solos, but it's largely sort of orchestra stuff. So I like the small group thing where you've got more freedom to sort of put out your own ideas and be in the moment.
And when you're in the small group also, there's more opportunity for you to just go and do your own thing without having to worry about everyone else, because they'll probably just follow along.
That's it.
Whereas if you've got a band of 16 people, you've got to be able to get those people the other side of the room in sync.
That's it. We've got to read off charts, you know. It'd be chaos otherwise.
It would.
Sometimes it is anyway, but try not to make it too chaotic for the listener.
Well, I'm hoping it's chaos for the band, but not for the audience.
That's it. It's organised chaos.
I think from the audience's perspective, it's just exciting.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be jazz if there's not some sort of element of chaos, I guess.
Well, that's
right. It's got to be improvised.
Again, it's that live aspect, isn't it?
That's it.
Mm. On Solo Voyager, there was a very interesting sound in there. Beautiful sound giving some melody, a Moog synthesizer.
That's right. I didn't plan to use a Moog on the album. I was only sort of practicing and fiddling around with my keyboard about a week before, and I found the sound. I was like, I really like this sound. It works, and it's so different. I thought, that's going to bring a different timbre to the album, because you've got beautiful guitar playing from Doug, and you've got some acoustic piano, obviously a lot of trumpet with Eric Budd, who's one of Gillaski's students. And I thought, this is a really nice thing. It's a different discipline. It's almost like a lyrical instrument. You can bend notes, and, you know, you've got to think differently, but it's a real fun thing. And, you know, Herbie Hancock's one of my favourite piano players, as he is for many piano players. And I guess I grew up with those sort of sounds from the 70s with Headhunters and that sort of thing. So I guess it's a bit reminiscent of that and some of the stuff that was at the halcyon years of Gil when he was at the forefront with Motown.
And as a pianist moving into that realm of the Moog, do you find it difficult to adjust?
A little bit. It's a different discipline, but I did kind of find it quite natural and very inspiring because suddenly there's a whole lot of different things, you know, using a colour palette thing. It's almost like a whole lot of different colours you've got to play with. It's very fun and it's less percussive and more vocal, so you can think sort of outside the square, I suppose, and bring different sounds to light.
Yeah. Does that then challenge you from a time perspective that you're enjoying it so much you just want to keep playing with it?
Yeah. It's always a challenge.
Good challenge. Good problem to have.
Very much so. The album itself has tracks from your own compositional skills and a couple of covers. We're going to have a listen to a piece that's a cover from very famous composers, Rodgers and Hammerstein.
That's right.
Called My Favourite Things. Now, this one's got some vocal on it.
That's right. I've worked with Freddie Ballison. He's originally from Mauritius, and he's a fantastic singer. And he sounds just like Stevie Wonder, and he can sound just like Michael Jackson. He's got a great voice, and he's a real asset to the album, and a lovely guy. So the drummer's from London. He's worked with Sarah Vaughan. That's Brian Abrahams. The bass player's from the US. We've got Christophe Junot from France, you know. David Hardy, trombone, from the UK. So it's an all-star international band.
What an amazing band to have, Rory.
It is. I'm very fortunate.
You are indeed, and thank you so much for popping in and talking to us a little bit about your development as a pianist and, most importantly, the brand new Rory Remembers album. Thank you for your memories.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and I hope you enjoy it.
Rory Clark on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.